This is episode 359, dated Friday, May 10th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to In Perspective. I am Bob Branco. Good to be here today. This is episode 359, dated Friday, May 10th, 2024. Before we continue, let me introduce our good friend and colleague, whom I'm jealous of his weather, by the way. I am so jealous that it's 81 degrees in Coos Bay. We've had such a cool and dank spring here in New England. It's pathetic. Peter, you can talk about the weather. That's okay. How are you?
Weather's gorgeous, and thank you. Hi, Bob. It's gorgeous here. It's been disgusting here for quite a while, but we have a gorgeous day here. And we're not supposed to get rain for at least the next 10 days, but it's going to cool off significantly. But I'll take this weather anytime. I love Coos Bay.
Don't blame you. All right, so let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be aired. We have Raymond Gay, our editor and producer. We have Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline. They post our shows. We also have our media outlets who air us when they can. Thank you for that. And of course, we have Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, who archives In Perspective on my website. If you want to hear archived programs, go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you see In Perspective podcasts, click on them and pick the show of your choice.
Merci, Jackie.
And let me take this opportunity to thank Marcy for being our host and facilitator for today's festivities. Thank you, Marcy, for taking the time to be with us this afternoon. We appreciate that. Also to Brad, of course, for mainstreaming In Perspective on ACB Media 5. Let me give up my email address for those people who are listening because they won't be on my mailing list. So that would be bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. You have any questions or comments about In Perspective and what we do. We have back for a second time, because he did such a good job the first time. We were teasing each other before the show started. He asked me if he was bad the first time and this was supposedly a redemption. No way, it's not a redemption. He was so good the first time, we offered to have him back this time. And we're talking about Dave Wilkinson. Dave, welcome back to In Perspective. We appreciate having you.
Dave
Wilkinson, welcome to In Perspective.
Did we lose you?
Don't tell me we lost him.
You didn't lose him. I just asked him to unmute.
Please unmute yourself, Dave.
There we go.
There you go.
It wouldn't let me unmute at first. My apologies.
Yes.
Welcome back to In Perspective.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry that I screwed up that beautiful introduction by whatever it was, but it's wonderful to be back. It's always good to be on In Perspective, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, you are an athlete and a technological specialist, from what I recall. You also are into music. Maybe you can clarify something for me. At some point, the words prog rock entered the picture when we were talking about you, and you're wondering how that happened.
I'm a huge fan of the rock group Yes. When I was a kid, the lead vocalist of Yes, a guy named John Anderson, enthralled me, and I became fascinated by the multiple time signatures and just sort of all the stuff that was going on as a kid that I didn't understand at all, and it stuck with me. And then when they became big in the 80s, I was happy to grab on tighter to that bandwagon. And I was telling you pre-show several years ago, I flew about 1,100 miles to get to meet John Anderson and a couple of other members of Yes. So I have a picture in my basement that shows as much. And when I finish Race Across America, which we'll get into in a little bit, I've requested that the song Cinema from Yes's 90125 album be playing when I cross the finish line. So they're quite integral in my existence and have been extremely important over the years.
So you never could leave it, right, Dave?
Absolutely not. I thought about quoting lyrics from Leave It, but thought that might be a little bit too obtuse.
Dave, you can do it in a roundabout way.
Mm-hmm. That's getting a little too close to the edge.
That's right. So Dave, in the promo that somebody sent promoting you, it said Alter Sports something or other. It said Techno Geek, and then it said Prog Rock and Heavy Metal Glutton for Punishment or something. I don't know who wrote those words, but talk about your Techno Geek part first, and then we'll talk about your sports stuff.
Oh, gosh. The Techno Geek stuff goes back a long way. I should preface all of this by stating that a zillion years ago, I was deathly afraid of technology. And so it was sort of ironic that I ended up working in the assistive technology field for so many years, and indirectly I'm still there. But when I was in college and grad school and my first couple of jobs out of grad school, you know, using a computer and all that kind of stuff was something that had to be endured. And it wasn't until I, by a fluke, got a job in this field that I discovered that I really liked it and that it was fun and that I couldn't break stuff and that at some point people would pay me to try. So over the years, I've worked for a number of companies from Freedom Scientific to HumanWare to the folks at HIMSS, who recently rebranded themselves as Selvus North America. I've worked for distributors. I'm currently a digital, what is my title? I don't know. I work for Hilton on the digital accessibility team. Title I can't remember, but it's something long. I've done some work for the Google disability support team over the years. And if you come into the office, there is just stuff everywhere, various computers and braille displays. And I've recently started playing with the latest line of Zoom recorders, and my wife has a desk full of stuff across the way. So it's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I used to say blind Radio Shack, but Radio Shack has been gone for a long time now. So I guess that doesn't work anymore.
You said you worked for Freedom Scientific. Do you know Jonathan Mosman?
Jonathan was there after I was. I know of Jonathan and I've met him a few times, but I have never really worked with Jonathan on anything. I was on it. The biggest thing that I've ever done with Jonathan is that he and I were on a radio show hosted by Stevie Wonder a number of years ago in California.
Well, that's a story worth. And maybe we'll get back to that. So we really want to talk about your sports exploits. And before we get into your upcoming activity in June, sort of give us an overview of how you got engaged in sports and what it's meant in your life.
I was an athlete in high school, and then I very much was not an athlete in college, and picked up a number of non-athletic habits along the way. I smoked at that point. I drank too much. Later discovered that I had a problem with alcohol. But that in itself kept me from really doing a whole lot of athletic stuff in college. And at an ACB convention in Houston in the mid-90s, whatever year that was, someone asked me if I was interested in learning about cross-country skiing, which I wasn't, until they mentioned that there was beer at the reception, and then I was. And I went to the reception, and when I do things, a lot of the time a switch kind of flips, and somewhere during this reception, I decided that I was going to go cross country skiing in the next event, the next Ski for Light event, which was in Minnesota. And that left me a few months to try to get into some semblance of shape so I wouldn't be in a complete embarrassment on the snow. And so I started working out several times a week, and by sheer luck, there was a fitness center in the building I was working in, and I would work out in this fitness center all the time. And then when I actually got to ski, I fell in love with the sport, and that began a long sort of trajectory up in the world of sort of getting into shape and looking at things that I could do. Yeah. And I became fascinated with the physical limits of the human body. And so over the years, I got into marathons, and I ran over 30 marathons. And that this is sort of condensing things a little bit. But in 2017, I was in a nasty car crash where I fractured two vertebrae and injured two more in my neck. It's C3 through C6 for folks who are counting. I had some nerve damage in my right hand and was immobilized for a while. I was in one of those really ridiculous looking neck collar things, and I was bored out of my mind, and I was a little bit mad that after all the things that I'd done in the world, that a car crash was going to be what almost took me out. And I started hunting for some way to prove definitively to me and the rest of the world, which was basically going to be me, that I was back. And I stumbled upon Ironman. And Ironman is a triathlon that is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and then you run a full marathon, which is 26.2 miles. And at the time I decided to do Ironman, I didn't own a bike. I wasn't really a very good swimmer, but I had a treadmill, so I figured that was a start. And I started putting things together and ended up doing the 2019 Louisville Ironman, and have done a number of triathlons, full and hands, and triathlons at other distances since then. And in the process of training for one, after a swim one morning, and when you're swimming as a blind swimmer in a triathlete, you're tied together. And I cannot emphasize enough how much I don't like swimming tied to another human being in open water, but it's one of those things that you just have to do if you're going to get to play in the world of triathlons. And so I was practicing open water swimming, and at the end of it, the person I was swimming with was like, have you ever thought about Race Across America, which I'd never heard of? And then she started describing how grueling and awful and painful it would be. And I got really interested. And I decided that anything that was that much work and that much trouble, and we'll get into some of the details of it in a little bit, was something that I was really interested to see if I could put together. And so I started training for this thing on New Year's Day of 2023. And a month from tomorrow, that training cycle will come to an end and we will hit the starting line.
So before we go any further, you, I think, ran the Boston Marathon the year that the, what's that, whatever the terrorist there who did it.
Yeah.
2013.
Yeah, 2013.
2013.
Talk about that a little bit. What was that like? What were you, you know, what happened from your perspective?
There are lots of that day that I do not remember in retrospect. I have a good part of it written down. I had gotten out of the marathon. I was having some reactions to a change in meds, and it became obvious I was not going to be able to finish this thing. And so when the bombs went off, I was in a tent that was about a block from where the bombs were. I was close enough to the bombs that you could feel them go through you. You know how you have that compression and then boom, it goes up to your body. And the first one, you figure something electrical has gone haywire or whatever, but the bombs were 15 seconds apart. And the second one that goes off, you know, you're in trouble. And it was terrifying. You don't know what to do in a terrorist attack. And at that exact moment, I had no cane. I had not thought to bring any form of identification. I didn't even have a shirt. We were doing this thing shirtless. And when I bowed out of the marathon, I made my guide continue. And so my guide wasn't there. And there were several people that were trying to get us back together, and there were a number of things that were happening there. But at the exact moment the bombs went off, I didn't know where to go, how I was going to get there, or what I was going to do. And I'm usually not somebody who gets afraid, and I'm not somebody who usually doesn't know what to do. And it was a very paralyzing experience. And a guy named Jack, whom I will probably never see again, and I don't know. Yeah. He came over to me and he told me, stay right where you are. Whatever happens out of this, we will get out of this together. No matter what anyone tells you to do, stay right here. And that sounded like a damn good idea. And so I did. And we eventually evacuated that tent so that it could be used for triage. And we had Jack's cell phone, which had one bar of battery, and we called the person where I was staying, which is right off of Boylston Street, which was right where the the bombs had gone off. It was right in the middle of everything. The street was being cordoned off, and we ended up getting back into the building that I was staying in through a fire escape. And this was all a couple hours after the bombs had gone off. I'm still not a big fan of loud noises. I learned a whole lot about what shock can do to you. We put an offer in on this house that I'm sitting in talking to you from 4 days after the Boston Marathon bombing, and I don't remember it.
Hmm.
I do remember after Tsarnaev was caught, which, you know, we could figure out the psychology of that for forever, but it took me a long time to really be able to talk about the Boston Marathon bombing. There were a lot of other sort of side stories that were going along with it, but the big thing that I learned is that it is, you know, if I'm never in another terrorist attack, it won't be too soon.
And you know, you never know how you're going to react in an emergency to actually experience it, unless you have really significant training in that area. I had a similar thing happened to me on 9/11, which I'll go into, but I was also in a much less powerful way than you were, sort of paralyzed. I didn't know what to do. And with the help of a really nice stranger, I was able to get out and get to where I needed to be. But it was a scary moment. So
what it does though, and I've experienced this multiple times in my life, and I, and Peter, you know this from being a New Yorker and living in DC and stuff, and people are always like, those people are so rude. And what I have found over the years is that when you need people, no matter where you are, people come through, and that there is an innate goodness in a heck of a lot of us, and I deeply appreciate it.
Peter, you mentioned 9/11, and one thing that I remember is right after 9/11, this whole country came together so nicely. See, we were such a unified country temporarily like that. It was wonderful to see that spirit.
It was.
It was indeed. But you know, in my particular situation, you know, somebody came through and I was able to get, as I said, to where I needed to go, but I wouldn't have been able to do it myself at that particular moment. And that's a very humbling place to be, at least for me, it was.
Before the bomb went off, and then I'll let this drop, I was already having a really, really, really bad day. I was not feeling very good. The change in meds had reacted very badly with me, and it was already a really horrible day. And that, I know, contributed to the paralysis of the moment, but it was sort of a cascade of events that were just sort of the wrong place, wrong time.
Wrong circumstances.
The other thing that I've learned out of that, and then I really will let it drop, Dawn and I couldn't communicate for the next couple of hours. Dawn is my wife, and I now run, swim, ride, whatever, with a cell phone that works, and I make sure that she always, always, always knows where I am.
Yeah, I understand that. That makes sense to me. So we may come back to that, but I want to sort of talk about why we brought you on in the first place, which is what you're doing. So talk about what this Ride Across America, what's that about? What will you be doing? You know, sort of talk about it.
Race Across America is billed as the world's toughest bike race. It's 3,000 miles. It starts in Oceanside, California, and you go across the country and you end up in Atlantic City, New Jersey. You have to finish it in 12 days or under. So that's a minimum of 250 miles a day that you're riding. There are 33 miles of climbing that are involved. You end up going through the Rockies and through the Appalachians. We get to spend a nice bit of time in the desert in California and Arizona, where it's going to be excruciatingly hot in the daytime, and then the temperature is going to bottom out at night into the upper 40s or low 50s. And I will be the first tandems. There have been 18 tandem bikes that have tried this. All of them had sighted riders on both the front and the back. You can do this as a solo project or as a team project. And I should point out that there was a team of four blind cyclists and their pilots who did this race in 2018. And by a team, what I mean is that one person quits and another one takes over. So you don't get the full pain of riding the whole thing. It was a heck of an accomplishment. But I just want to be able to separate that out so that you understand sort of what they were doing compared to what I'm doing. My pilot, a gentleman named Jim Trout, who's done this race twice before, and I will become the first tandem cycling team with a blind rider on the back to finish this as a solo project. Out of the 18 tandems that have tried this with sighted riders on the front and the back, 9 of them have made it. So the odds are looking, you know, it's going to be a challenge. We have a crew of 8 people. We will be followed at all times, or there, I guess not technically not at all times, but it will be very, very close to us, a supply van, and we will be fueled on the bike. We've been working on ways of handing off water bottles, nutrition, food, et cetera, while traveling at 17, 18 miles an hour on the bike. And we're using something called musette bags, which is these bags that have these long straps. And basically I hold out an arm and someone plays ring toss and tosses the bag onto my arm as we go by. And then I get the new stuff out, put the old bottles, trash in the bag. I then drop the bag at some point over on the side of the road. The van comes along, picks it up, goes in front of us. We are in communication by radio. They ask what we need next. They get the bags ready to go and we repeat the whole process. So
what's the total distance?
Total distance is 3,000 miles.
So I'm really fascinated. I mean, never mind the physical challenges, which I can imagine. The logistical challenges strike me as also almost as challenging, sort of getting the support system in place to make this work. So talk about that, but start talk by talking about how you connected with your front man.
Oh my gosh. Connecting with Jim is one of the better stories of this whole thing. First of all, with logistics, I've argued that my logistics are very similar are probably no less complicated than Taylor Swift's, except that she has to deal with all that fame and adulation. And I'm just skipping that part, but
Taylor, who? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Smith. Yes, Smith. Go ahead, Dave.
I was originally supposed to do this with a dear friend of mine who I've done a lot of triathlons with. And a couple of months into the training cycle, he called me and said that he just wasn't going to be able to do it, that there were family circumstances that had changed. And so for several weeks, I was training for this race with no guide. And I found a Race Across America Facebook forum and figured I've got nothing to lose. And so it felt to me a lot what dating sites must feel like. You know, I put this thing, you know, blind athlete wanting to do Race Across America. Here are all of my qualifications. This is why I can make it. This is going to be fantastic and wonderful. Anybody interested? And people wrote back. And you know, and that wasn't the exact wording, but it was kind of the theme of it. It was just like, I really want to do this. This is a chance for us to do something that's never been done before. And Jim Trout wrote me back and he's like, I've done this race twice before. Never done it on a tandem. That sounds really interesting. Let's talk. And we had a Zoom conversation and it just kind of clicked. And he sent me a hysterical email that I'll have to find that had, you know, the subject line was something like pains and aggravations one can expect from Race Across America. And he had this whole list of like, you know, getting blisters on your lips from the desert and stuff. And the longer the list was, the more I thought this is going to be dreadful. This is going to be epic. And so Jim and I met, we rode for the first time a couple months after that. And then we just clicked and we've only ridden 3 or 4 times together. We did do a 400-mile race together last September. And we did a couple hundred miles of riding a couple of months ago, but a lot of my training has been done on a trainer that, which is essentially a bike hooked up to a computer where the resistance is controlled by my coach. So I can't make it easier. And I go nowhere for 7-8 hours at a time and I just pedal this thing. And then it gets harder when there are supposed to be hills and, you know, the resistance changes to mimic topography and stuff. And, you know, I go down to my basement or take this thing out onto the deck and I'm going nowhere for 150 miles.
So you haven't worked with Jim a lot, but enough that you feel like really comfortable working with him.
I feel extremely comfortable with Jim. He wants to live through this. He has done this before. We have been able to have very blunt email and in-person conversations about things that we need to do with this. Mm-hmm. He's been extraordinarily helpful as far as what we need to do logistically. And so I feel very, his wife and two of his sons are part of our crew. And then my sister and a really, really good friend of mine are also part of our crew. So we've got Jim and I both have people that are extremely important to us that are in our crews or in our Speedy Turtle crew, and they will be looking out for us and taking care of us. And I feel extraordinarily comfortable riding with Jim.
So how many people are participating in this race altogether?
You would think I would know such an obvious question. There are a couple hundred cyclists total. Most of them are doing this as teams. So you'll have a team of like 2, 4, or 8 cyclists. There are only about 30 people doing this as a solo from coast to coast, so that we're doing the entire thing. Out of those 30 or so, they are from all over the world. So, but there are most people who are doing this as teams.
So let's talk about some of the logistics. You know, obviously you talked about the complexity. Talk about how they all fell into place and what's all involved. You talked about some of it. It must be a lot more than we've been thought about.
There are things that I would have never thought of, like getting smart helmets that can talk to each other. We've spent forever looking at different ways of marking nutrition bottles and water bottles so that as my hands get numb, the markings are still plain enough that I can tell whose bottles are Jim's, whose are mine, what's water and what is, you know, nutrition, this goopy stuff that we all have our different mixtures of that we want. This crew is going to have, just getting the crew there. We've got crew coming in from all over the country. You can't get them round trip tickets. You're getting 2 one-way tickets. You're right. Flying out to one coast and home from the other coast. The sleeping schedules for the crew. We will have an RV, and Hilton has very graciously provided some hotel rooms along the way so that the crew should get at least some time in a hotel when they're not working. But that will be a logistical issue in itself, getting the crew to a hotel and from the hotel.
What's an RV?
A recreational vehicle. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Because a lot of us are not initial savvy, let's just say. A question for you, Dave. You mentioned a smart helmet. I'm intrigued by that. How does a smart helmet talk to another smart helmet?
You have essentially radio transmitters in them, and it's almost like voice activated walkie talkies, and you tune them to the same channel and you can talk to each other. And so when the van gets within about a quarter of a mile of us, they're back in range and they've got a headset and they can ask us, what is it that you want? You know, when we get back up in front of you and you pass by us again, this smart helmet can also Bluetooth to my phone so that I can sit there and call people from my bicycle. It's also Alexa enabled, which just baffles me, but it uses basically your phone to be able to reach out to Alexa. But the smartest part of it is that you are able to make a network of radios out of it so that you can actually communicate with each other. And Jim and I will be talking to each other through these helmets, because when the wind picks up, you can't hear each other.
Yeah. So what's the budget for this endeavor?
The budget keeps growing. It's probably in the neighborhood of about $35,000-$37,000.
And that includes everything, right? The bike, the airplane, the bike repairs, all that stuff, sort of.
It does. Now we have been able to do a number of things we have a bike engineer that's going with us, and we have a bike shop that is extraordinarily graciously Clarksville Schwinn, for everyone who's in Clarksville, Indiana. Clarksville Schwinn has agreed to let us take essentially whatever we want from the store and pay for whatever we don't bring back. which is extraordinarily helpful because we can overstock and then we can return whatever we don't use as long as it's in its original packaging.
Sure.
The other thing that helped us keep the budget from growing it even bigger is that Jim owns an RV, and so we didn't have to rent the thing. So, you know, it's scary, but, you know, $37,000 is a pretty conservative budget for this thing.
I'm surprised it's that low, personally. I thought it'd be higher.
It's because of things. And the other part about that is that my crew's not getting paid. No one's getting paid out of this thing. I'm paying their expenses, but this doesn't include, you know, a whole lot for it. And like Jim is driving his family to the West Coast. That reduces costs. Mm-hmm. So we've done a lot of things to keep it you could spend as much as you want on this, and there are people that'll be doing this with six figure budgets. You know, and so we'll be at the more impoverished end of doing this thing.
So are you fundraising or do you need money or what is it that you need?
We always need money. Anyone who wants to get it, who wants to donate or to buy a Speedy Turtle shirt can go to speedyturtle.net. We have had some extraordinary responses from a number of entities, including Hilton and the folks at Hims and the folks at Nanopack. My good friends at Envision have been extraordinarily helpful. The folks at Ira, I'm going to leave people out, which is going to be embarrassing. Something that didn't figure into the budget because Jim ended up just getting it was Santana offered us an extraordinary deal on a bike that was more appropriate for riding across the country. And they gave it and Jim ended up just buying it because he really wanted it. So
Santana, are we talking about like the 1970s rock group?
Carlos? Really? No.
Carlos wasn't involved. This is an bike manufacturer, but a good.
I was wondering. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So we're taking three bikes with us. We're taking the Santana tandem, which is not the fastest tandem on earth, but it's comfortable. And when you're riding 3,000 miles, comfort comes into play because you got to be able to live through this experience. We're taking my tandem bike, which is made by a company called Burley, which is a faster bike, not quite as comfortable. It's more suited for things like riding a couple hundred miles at a time. I think we'll probably use it for going across Kansas because they're flats and that bike will just kill it on the flats. And then we have a third bike in case that's basically just there in case the whole world falls apart. That is an old bike made by a company called Comotion that is heavy. We're mainly taking it for one giant hill in California on the first day.
So Dave, I have two more questions before hopefully we can get to both of them before we throw it over for the audience. The first is, what do you anticipate your average day looking like?
My average day will consist of riding as much as humanly possible on the bike, probably 20 hours a day. And
it sleep. Only leaves you with 4 hours of sleep.
It does. It does. And those 4 hours of sleep will be somewhere where we can pull off the road. I bought a little cot. I have a great little foam mattress and a sleeping bag. And my good friend Erica, who's also our bike engineer, has rigged up a shower on the back of our van that we're renting. It's a long explanation on how the shower works, but we'll be able to rinse off with these jugs of water that are pouring down through the shower head and then sleep. And then get up and do it again. And
so it sounds like you won't be having any quote unquote real food, right? It sounds like you're going to be eating, you know, at high energy, formulas, but not, you know, pasta, for example.
We will be eating some real food. We are hoping to have one meal a day where we stop for 15, 20 minutes and just eat something sane. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the time, it's going to be all, you know, high carb, high protein, high fructose stuff. There are snacks mixed in with that. And then you get these weird cravings where you're just like, this is what I want and I will die unless I get it. And then the poor crew has to figure out a way to get it too.
Once again. So my last question before open the questions is something that you said a couple of times. And I'm curious if you have any idea why this is for you. You talked about how the more challenging it was and how painful it was for you physically, the more excited you got about it. Do you have any idea as to what that's about? you know, many of us, if we said, you know, I'm going to be in serious pain, run as far away from the opposite as possible. What do you think makes you excited to do that kind of stuff?
And at this exact moment, I would be remiss if I didn't say I was absolutely terrified because I am. But I'm fascinated with the limits of the human body, both physically and psychologically. And I always want to find out what my limits are. And I think that's in the process of doing that, I've been able to have a lot of extraordinary experiences in my life. And, you know, that's the only way I know to do it. I mean, when I met my wife, I was living across the country from her. And, you know, it's that same impulse that allowed me to drop everything and move across country to give our relationship a chance. And now here we are, you know, 20 years later.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated with what we can do. And I think a lot of what we can do. We're always told that you can't do things. And I'm always interested in that line in the sand and then putting one toe across it and seeing where it gets me.
We have about 20 minutes left in the program, so let's turn it over to our participants. You're listening to In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco, and he's Peter Altschul. Our guest is Dave Wilkinson. He's going to be participating in Race Across America. Very fascinating stuff, Dave. So, Marcy,
Point out one thing before you open it up for questions. Kentucky ACB made a very generous donation along with the Greater Louisville Council of the Blind. And so I want to emphasize that as part of the ACB connections. And they were both extraordinary along with the local Lions Club here.
Great plug. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
all right. So and Marcy, yes, go ahead.
We do. Let's begin with Greg.
Greg from Wisconsin. How are you?
Good, good. And Michael, thank you for taking the time to be on here, and Bob and Peter, thanks for taking my question.
It's Dave, by the way. It's Dave, I think you're talking to
Dave. Yes. Sorry. Yes. And Dave, I work with the ACB Next Generation affiliate, which is based originally out of Louisville, Kentucky. So anyway, what do you look for in a good tandem bike partner? And because I've ridden tandem before, and you need to find that right partner. Am I right about that? And so what do you personally look for in a good tandem partner?
I'm going to do what politicians do since this is an election year, and I'm going to answer the question that I want to answer, which will partially answer the question that you asked. What you need in a good tandem team, and this is where I'm expanding it a bit, is a high level of tolerance and patience on both sides, from the stoker and the pilot. So the rider on the front and the back. You both need to be very tolerant of each other in the beginning, and understanding that you are going to make mistakes, that there are difficulties. One of the hardest things that you learn how to do with a new tandem pilot is how to get the bike started, especially if you're using clip-in pedals, so that you can start moving, you know, in some sort of a synchronous fashion. I don't think you know if you found a good tandem partner until you've ridden with them for a few hours and you've had a chance to work off the rust. Once you get to that point, to narrow it back down to what you're asking for, I want someone who is very direct, someone who's willing to work with me on what we both need as far as things like directions. I want directions to be very concise, so that if they're given to me quickly, there's no room for interpretation. And I want someone who believes in themselves as much as they believe in me, because we both got to trust each other with this thing.
Can I ask a real quick follow-up question, just very quickly? So you mentioned the website. Are you going to keeping any kind of like blog, audio blog or journal of how can we keep progress on how you're doing, you know? And
very good question. I will not be doing an audio blog. I will be putting every ounce of energy I have into this race. However, we will have regular tracking information. There is a place on the website where you can sign up for a Facebook group where we will be There'll be constant updates. We are going to put out a newsletter before this race that has tracking information on how you can keep track of us. But the easiest way is going to be to join, is going to be to join our Facebook group. I would love to be able to do a blog during it, and I'm simply going to be too exhausted.
I understand. And thank you for answering my questions, and good luck to you. Definitely cheering for you and rooting for you. As someone who's blind, I think it's nerve wracking to even thinking about, you know, tandem biking. I've gone a few inches on a few feet on a tandem bike myself and just felt like a feeling that I was going to tip over. So I give you a lot of credit. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Dave, what is that website again?
BeatyTurtle.net. .com is already taken, so it's beatyturtle.net.
What, okay. What kind of turtle?
Beatty, S-P-E-E-D-Y.
Beatyturtle.net. Okay, sounds good.
Right, thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Marcy, next. Who's next?
Deanna.
Deanna, last week's guest.
Hi, welcome. Dave. I think we've known each other for more than 20 years. I remember you coming into my fair trade gift shop, I think, in Colorado Springs and buying a singing bowl from me one time.
I have it.
And at that time, I was using a 10-speed tandem. And before that, I'd had a Schwinn single speed. But at 75, I don't think I'm going to be trying what you're trying. But I wish you all the luck in the world. And have always enjoyed our brief encounters over technology.
Well, that singing bowl is sitting in my basement.
A singing bowl?
It's yes.
A
singing
bowl. Yeah. You rub the little wood, a wooden rod around the edge of it and it vibrates and it sings to you.
What does it sing?
It's really cool, actually.
It actually hums. It's one note and you use it. It's very calming. You can sit there and just sort of meditate and zone
in. Sort of like a mantra.
It is.
Yeah, it's made out of brass and it is tuned just in the same way like crystal glasses.
Yeah.
That you can get a note out of. And if you put water in them at different levels, you can get different notes. But I've never tried it with a singing bowl to see if it works the same way as crystal does. But yeah, I used to sell lots of small musical instruments in my fair trade gift shop. And I remember Dave coming in. I don't remember what we were talking about and why you were there, but
no idea
what tech company you were working for at the time. But I do remember you fell in love with it and bought it.
I did. It's still here.
So good luck and hugs.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Deanna.
Thanks, Deanna. Marcy, who's next?
Tony.
Tony, welcome.
Hey, hello everybody. Hi, Dave. I used to be an athlete. I even wrote a memoir about my wrestling and running career, but in the midst of all that was some triathloning, and I did have a Santana tandem. And I'm wondering about maybe some key barrier that you may have had the hardest time with because of visual impairment or blindness, you know, that makes this, you know, a little bit more special because, you know, people are sighted, they have to overcome barriers, but we have to overcome even more barriers. And then I have a follow-up question after that if there's time, but I'm just curious, is like, is there any like one seriously difficult thing that you had to overcome that has specifically to do with visual impairment or blindness?
The inability to be able to ride on the street every day and having to ride nowhere for hours and hours on end has been extraordinarily difficult. And I don't say that as a way of someone saying, oh, that sounds awful or whatever. I mean, I choose to do it. But a sighted person would never spend as much time on a bike trainer as I've spent. And they would never pedal for hours and hours and hours and go nowhere, which I have done more times than I can count. And so it's one of those things that you just have to decide, I really want this. I want it really, really badly. And I will find things to combat the mind-numbing boredom that goes with it. And you just have to slog your way through it. the other barrier that I will face on the road, when I get off the bike, there's a tendency to want to actually move and walk. And I need to not do that because we're going to be right by streets and I need to wait and have someone let me know where is safe to walk. And that goes against everything that I want to do. I want to just take off and do my own thing. And I'm not going to be able to do that. I need for people to tell me and show me where to go and where is safe and where is reasonable for me to go so that I don't wander out into a street and get splashed and splatted by a car.
Oh, no.
I understand that that inability to just move your body at will is probably one of the things I talk about the most in the memoir I wrote about my athletic career as just it's an inhibitor. And I think that, you know, we all talk about things in a way that gives the reading public hope and happiness and all that. And we don't like to talk about these blindness things. But, you know, in this forum here, we're allowed to talk about those blindness things. And then I just wanted to let you know what I decided to do because I wanted to have a little more mastery of my situation was I actually had the bike mechanic locate the gear shift mechanisms to my handlebar in the back.
Yes.
And that forced all sorts of fascinating and constructive communications and gave me a lot of interest and power. Did you do anything like that?
I have not for this trip. And part of the reason that I haven't for this trip is that every second counts. It is an absolute 12-day time limit. And if you finish in 12 days and 1 minute, it doesn't count. I want an experienced rider to be able to make those decisions when we come up to hills and different, I would very much like to do that when I'm not on the clock, if that makes sense. But I feel like when I'm running against a clock that is already, we already have enough disadvantages being on a tandem. The things creep uphill. You can't take advantage of all of your speed going downhill because you've got to be able to go slow enough that you can make tight turns. And I need to be able to take any other disadvantage off the table. And I viewed that as a potential disadvantage, especially as we start to get more exhausted and, you know, just hallucinating.
I'm curious. Thank you. Anything else, Tony?
No, I'm good. Thank you, Dave.
Okay. Thank you. So Dave, I'm just curious. You talked about sort of riding, you know, for hours at a time, not going anywhere. And how did you sort of get through that? What kinds of things did you do while you were pedaling to nowhere?
Public radio, podcasts, music, books from Audible. Dawn would sometimes come down to the basement and we'd watch TV together. It depends on the baseball, football, basketball. Love baseball because there's no real clock. And so it's easy to get lost in, you know, in the flow of the game. You know, you literally just do anything to be able to just try to keep your mind moving forward.
Yeah. No, cause that's mind numbing as it were, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's still excruciatingly dull. I've got a 5.5 hour ride tomorrow and an 8 hour ride on Sunday. And I've reached the point where I'm just like, oh God, but at least at this point, there's an end to them. And so there's that level of excitement.
Thank you for that. Who's next?
Paul.
I apologize in advance for asking such a basic and embarrassing question, but this is all new. I'm learning a lot, but how do you handle your bathroom needs?
That is a very good question. And there are several answers. If you're just looking at peeing, there are woods on the roadside.
Hopefully.
We will be stopping at various points when the van has to get gas, we have to stop. You know, if we are going to be going through towns, not big ones, but we will be going through towns. If we know that there's gas stations or restaurants or, you know, dollar stores or whatever coming up, if you see one that's convenient, you're going to hop off and use it. I don't think we'll completely know until we're there, and it's going to be even more interesting to try to sync up the needs of two people. The one thing that we will not do is the old triathlete trick, which is you just figure if you got to go, you just go. And we're going to be riding too much for that. It'd be too smelly and too disgusting, and we are not going to do that.
Well, Dave, if you ever come by here in this neighborhood, Amy and I will be more than happy to let you use our facilities.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And that's a very reasonable question. The good news is you're going through so much, you're sweating so much, and you're going through so many calories that you really don't have to go near as much as you think you would.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think that the real challenge is to keep hydrated.
The real challenge will be to keep hydrated. We do have a nurse with us. I'll give you an example of how this goes. My 400-mile race that I did to qualify for this, I burned 17,000 calories.
I can't imagine what that's like. That's
how much weight loss?
None, because you start retaining fluid after a while.
Oh, okay.
Now a few days from then you might start losing weight, but when you finish this, I will put on 7 or 8 pounds of fluid as we do this.
And then when it's over, then the fluid dissipates. Is that what happens?
Exactly.
And then you might really lose some weight. So I guess one of the things that the nurse
said to eat everything in sight.
Yeah. One of the things that the nurse will be doing is sort of monitoring this stuff, right? Monitoring, you know, your fluid intake and, you know, making sure you're good to go and you're not, you know, doing all the things that can go wrong.
Yes. I mean, you know, and even to the point that we're taking a scale with us and we'll weigh on a regular basis to make sure that we're not losing weight, because that means that you aren't getting enough fluid and your body's not keeping fluid. We'll have saline and she'll be able to do like IVs and stuff if we need it to get really, you know, hydrated fast and this type of stuff. So, you know, she's got an incredibly important job.
Where did you find her?
My friend Erica found her, my bike engineer. It's a good friend of hers who was looking for an adventure, and Erica was like, "Have I got one for you?"
Because that strikes me as sort of a really unique sort of nursing job.
Yes,
you know, I don't know much about nursing, but that's the average job description doesn't mean, you know, riding in a van and making sure that these crazy people are hydrated, you know, and whatever else can go wrong. I'm sure that's stuff I don't even know about. You know, that can go out of whack when you're.
I have one more question before we turn it back over to our participants. What is the exact starting point and the exact finish line?
The starting point is the pier at Oceanside, California, and we finish on the pier at Atlantic City. So we will start with the Pacific right behind us, and we will end with the Atlantic right in front of us.
I see.
And we have 5 minutes, and we're clear on hands.
Oh, okay.
Just interrupt us when somebody raises their hand. And thank you for the time check, Marcy. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Marcy. So, Dave, what other things can go wrong medically? I mean, I know the TAMS can break down and so on and so forth. But it's just the 4 hours of sleep every night strikes me is potentially dangerous.
It is.
You know, so how do you sort of monitor that? Or do you?
The short answer is I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
It will be... Really, you know, there's going to be way too much caffeine intake. You know, those 4 hours of sleep are going to have to count. We're going to have to be really, but we're going to be, you know, just zombies by the end of this. If you retain too much fluid, that can be a health concern. Obviously if you have accidents or crashes, you could have health concerns, you know, or get hurt. Part of how I do this is to not know some of the possibilities, mm-hmm. which I have a crew that's looked into things thoroughly and understands exactly what all could happen. It's just like my younger sister has been obsessed with looking at parts of the course, and she's like, "Let me tell you about this part of the course." And I'm like,
"No,
I'll find out when I get there."
Dave, what is the start date and the end date?
Very good question. Start date is June the 11th, sometime between noon and 1:30 Pacific time. We have not been given our precise starting time. I think we will either be right at noon or right at 1:30. They'll have
that's a Tuesday.
That's a Tuesday. We have to finish by 3 p.m. local time in Atlantic City, June the 24th. We are
in almost 2 weeks.
We are really hoping to be there sometime on the 23rd. Which would be 11 days.
And what are your plans afterwards?
sleep.
I have a half Ironman 6 weeks later.
You're kidding.
Not, and then I've got a full 2 months, 6 weeks after that.
I seem to recall that when we talked with you last, you'd said, I'm going to do one more Ironman, and that was going to be the end of it, that you were going to retire from your Ironman doing. Obviously that didn't happen.
No, it's this one will be part of the reason I got sucked into doing the half Ironman is they're coming back to Louisville after not having it for a while. And I don't care about the time. I haven't swam in forever. I haven't run in forever. We're just going to do this thing and enjoy it and not worry about time as much as I used to.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap up. We have about a minute or maybe even less. Dave, good luck to you. I really, really am in awe of what you're doing. Not everybody can do such a thing as race a bicycle and even ride a bicycle thousands of miles consecutively. And I think this is great. We're proud of you. And I hope it's a great success for you and everybody involved. We appreciate you coming on the show to talk about it. Sharing your
We'll bring you back in the end of the year sometime and see how things went.
Thank you. I'm going to throw the website out there one more time, which is
yes, please.
SpeedyTurtle, SPEEDY turtle.net. You can also email me at dave@speedyturtle.net.
dave@speedyturtle.net. Thank you very much for being on the show. We appreciate it.
Loved it. Thank you for the opportunity. You all have a wonderful evening and have a fantastic summer.
Thanks, Dave.
You too. And thank you, everybody else, for your participation. And Peter, thank you as well.
You're
Go
welcome.
Safe with
have
God.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Marcy. Go safe with God, everybody. Have a great week.